This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. It's Bastille Day, the 225th anniversary of the Parisian mob taking over the fortress prison that stood for royal absolutism. What better day to hear about how five émigrés from that revolution went on to have a big impact on the United States of America? François Furstenberg, an historian at Johns Hopkins, has written a weighty but extraordinarily readable account of five French liberals, most of them aristocrats, who had worked ardently to reform the Ancien Régime, the old power structure of France, but fell afoul of later more radical waves of that revolution and fled to the New World in the early 1790s. They all settled in Philadelphia, then the nation's capital. Regular listeners to interviews about history on this show know we tend to treat Baltimore as the center of the universe, not the city of brotherly love. But since Furstenberg teaches and writes about history from a perch at Hopkins, we asked him to tell us about his new book called When the United States Spoke French, Five Refugees Who Shaped a Nation. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
We don't have enough time on air, unfortunately, to profile each of these five. When you say they shaped a nation, give me an example of what one of them did that had a lasting impact.
I think the person who probably most played a role, an influential role in American history, is Talleyrand, or Talleyrand, who's the major French diplomat in history. And when he came over here, it was before he became the Minister of French Foreign Relations, and he was taking refuge. But while he was here, part of what he did was to get very interested in land speculations. So he toured around the country, learned a lot about American manners and about American lands, and invested with several important partners, mercantile connections that he had forged while he was in the United States. And after he returned to France, he became the French foreign minister under Napoleon. And it was during his, in fact, it was in large part his doing that his promotion of the idea that got France, that got Napoleon to attempt to reestablish a French empire in North America and take Louisiana and make it French again, which it was, it had been a Spanish colony since the 1760s. And it was under Talleyrand that that mission failed, and it was Talleyrand himself who participated in the negotiations that sold Louisiana to the United States. And he used some of the same mercantile connections that he'd forged while he was here to finance the deal. So he played a very important role on both sides of the Atlantic, in a sense.
Yeah, it was fascinating how deep and extensive the connections of all these guys were. Why did they all end up in Philadelphia?
Well, Philadelphia was the capital of the United States at the time. This is before Washington, D.C. had been built. And it was the biggest city. It was bigger than New York still at the time. It was the most cosmopolitan city. It was the financial capital. It was where the Bank of the United States had been established. It was the sort of cultural capital. It had the library company. It had major cultural institutions, the American Philosophical Society. These are still around today, in fact. So in a sense, it combined all the advantages of a major city. I mean, it was as close as the United States had to London or to Paris. It combined the cultural, the economic, and the political capital at one. So it was really where these figures would have come and would have wanted to be.
Yeah, and you describe Philadelphia as being very French. Tell us how.
That's right. I mean, I think a lot of people have a sense of Philadelphia, of the American capital. I mean, we read books about whoever it is, Washington or Hamilton or John Adams, and we have a sense of Philadelphia as this kind of Quaker city that's fundamentally American, where Americans are getting together and writing the Constitution. But during the 1790s, this is an age of war and revolution throughout the Atlantic world, in France and in the Caribbean, and thousands of people are fleeing warfare and up to the United States, and thousands of them come to Philadelphia because it was the city with the most important mercantile connections. So the ships coming out of the Caribbean are bringing thousands of French people who are settling in Philadelphia, and it's hard to get exact numbers, but somewhere around 10% of the population of Philadelphia at this time would have been French speaking.
That really is a language one would have heard at the end of the 18th century on the streets of Philadelphia.
Absolutely. It would have been unavoidable. I mean, Philadelphia is an incredibly dense city. No cities in the United States today are quite as dense as it was then. The only city we have today that's comparable in density and population density is Bombay, Mumbai. Of course, it's much bigger. Philadelphia was much smaller. But really, the city was the size of a college campus, in a sense, I mean, in terms of its density. And so it would have been impossible to avoid hearing French being spoken on the streets. And they left a real imprint on the city in terms of its food, in terms of its furniture, clothing, all kinds of fashions coming in, and people really modeling themselves on French cuisine and French culture.
That's François Furstenberg here on Maryland Morning, WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. He's associate professor of history at Johns Hopkins, and we're talking about his new book just published, When the United States Spoke French, Five Refugees Who Shaped a Nation. You promised in your introduction that seeing the new American Republic through the eyes of these emigres would give us new insights into our own country. And I got to tell you, that happened for me when you write that in the 18th century, France looked at the United States, quote, largely as an appendage to their Caribbean possessions, close quote. How is the U.S. an appendage to the Caribbean?
It seems somewhat counterintuitive today. I mean, given the current kind of geopolitics, the Caribbean is one of the poorer regions, whereas the United States is an incredibly wealthy country. But at the time, in a sense, it was reversed. The Caribbean was the real powerhouse of the global economy, of the, or at least of the Atlantic economy. These are colonies that are producing sugar and coffee in particular, and they're producing phenomenal wealth for merchants in Europe and for European nations in general. And throughout the 18th century, France, Britain, Spain, they all battled it out to try to hold these colonies against each other. And many of the islands would switch from one empire to another. And the stakes were incredibly high. I mean, these really were the foundations of enormous wealth for European countries. And so the United States was growing in terms of its commerce, but it wasn't nearly as important in terms of the material value of the commodities that were being produced as the Caribbean. And one of the major advantages, one of the reasons that France had intervened in the American Revolution, was to protect its Caribbean possessions. During the Seven Years' War, the war just previous to the American Revolution, the 1750s and 60s that had taken place, France had been massively defeated by the British Navy. And part of the reason that the British Navy was so successful was because it had these bases, these military bases, naval bases in North America. And if France could detach some of these colonies, the North American colonies, away from Great Britain, they might themselves have all the advantages.
And you write, just at this time, which is kind of halfway between two wars we Americans do tend to pay attention to, which is the American Revolution and the War of 1812. And we're sort of halfway between those in the period you write about. And that's just when, you say, the equality and liberté rhetoric of the French Revolution was like a match to a tinderbox in Saint-Domingue, which is now Haiti.
Oh, in Haiti, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Haiti was at the time it was a French colony. It was the colony of Saint-Domingue, and there were roughly 500,000 slaves working on the plantations in incredibly grueling conditions, largely sugar, but also also coffee and some other commodities, and there were about 30,000 whites and about 30,000 free people of color. And there were bitter political debates
and tens of thousands of slaves,
right? Hundreds of thousands, about 500,000 slaves. Over the course of the late 1780s, beginning of the 1790s, the gens couleur, the people of color, freed people of color, and whites were fighting about civil rights for free blacks. And while they were arguing about liberty and equality and all the ideas of the French Revolution that were empowering free blacks, slaves, hundreds of thousands of slaves were looking on. And this was very dangerous arguments to be having. And in 1791, the slaves in the northern plains of Saint-Domingue began to rebel. And over the course of the next decade, it would become the most important slave revolution in world history, really. And it would lead to the independence of Haiti in 1804, an independence that's really very, very much bound up with the United States and with the American and with the French revolutions.
Ultimately, none of these five emigres you profile stayed in the United States.
That's right. They all left. Most of them had come as refugees. I mean, they weren't intending to stay. They weren't intending to settle. They weren't, in a sense, immigrants. They were taking refuge from the political battles in Europe, and they wanted to go back as soon as they can. They never lost really their sense of their French identity and their loyalties towards France. So most of them had left by the late 1790s. In 1798, diplomatic relations between the United States and France really degenerated and sort of flushed the remaining refugees out of the United States back to France. Only one stayed until 1802, and that was Noailles, Lafayette's brother-in-law, who'd settled here. And he'd lost his wife and his father to executions in France. And he seemed not to have wanted to return for much longer than the others.
So many great stories. Congratulations on the book.
Well, thank you very much.
François Furstenberg, he'll be speaking about his new book, When the United States Spoke French, Five Refugees Who Shaped a Nation, tomorrow at the Ivy Bookshop on Falls Road in Baltimore, 7 p.m. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. More of this interview there, too. I'm Sheila Cast. There's more ahead. Stay with us on 88.1.